All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Kabbalah of Character. This is lesson number six out of eight, and the title of the class is The Fall of the Wall. The Fall of the Wall. And by the end of the class, whoever gets the connection between the title and the content, okay, whoever gets the connection between the fall of the wall and what we're speaking about, let me know because I have no idea. No idea. Zero clue the connection.
You have to ask if everyone has the copy.
Oh, yes. I am not going to forget. I'm obsessive about this. Does everyone have the Kabbalistic chart? Does everybody have the chart? This is required materials. I don't require much. Just show up. But you need these. Okay, I have an extra copy if anyone needs it. There we go. Good. If you need it also, it's in the book, page, I believe, 16. 16 or 17? 17. Okay, you guys ready?
Yes, sir.
Let's do it. All right, so this is lesson six. And we are going to talk about getting the job done. How do you get it done? Okay, how do we get the job done? Let's recap where we're up to, and we're going to cover tonight two of the soul powers, Netzach and Hod. You can find them toward the bottom third of soul powers, Netzach on the right side, Hod on the left side. That will be our focus tonight, but how did we get here, and why are we here in the first place? I'm glad you all asked. So, this course is all about getting to understand our souls better. We know, you know, it's basic knowledge, and I know it's not so basic, but I'm saying it's basic, and work with me on this. A body is, by its own nature, inert. A body doesn't move. That's why after a person passes away, the body might be there in its entirety, but it's not moving. The body itself doesn't have life. There is the body, and then there's the life that's flowing through it, not unlike, I don't know, Lahavdil, giving just a completely, you know, random example, a watch that needs a battery, so you could have the watch there in its entirety, but it's not ticking, it's not moving, unless it has the battery inside of it. A body without a soul is inert. It is unmoving. It is not animated. It is, for lack of better terminology, it's a dead body. So it's a body without a soul is not moving. A body with a soul is moving. So fine, so we have a soul. We have a, if you don't want to call it soul, you can call it a life force, a vitality, whatever you want to call it, it's a flow of life inside of us. But drilling down a little bit deeper, Kabbalah explains that the soul possesses, the life force that we have contains specifically 10 unique and individual powers, 10 soul powers, 10 kochot hanefesh that mirror the 10 sefirot, 10 higher cosmic powers through which and with which God creates the universe. So, if we want to know ourselves better, and many of us do, all of us here do certainly, and many people in the world, many of us, of the 7 or so billion people on earth, wish to know themselves better, it is a great place to start by looking at the 10 soul powers as delineated in Kabbalah. So the objective of the course is character improvement through Kabbalah's soul map, understanding who we are and putting it to good practice to become more of a mensch, a better person than we were before we started this journey. So, if we were dividing these soul powers into categories, what we've done until now is say that we have 3 intellectual soul powers and 7 emotional soul powers. 3 intellect, 7 emotional. However, if you drill down a little bit more specifically, we're going to divide it into 3 categories, not 2. You with me? I'm changing the definitions. We're changing the protocol midstream. Instead of 2 categories, intellect and emotions, we are now presenting 3 categories. Intellect, emotions, and, I don't have an elegant word for it, but facilitating powers, aka facilitators. So intellect, I told you it's not elegant, but work with me. Intellect, emotion, and facilitators. In other words, pragmatic powers of the soul that help us get things done. So there's how you think, there's how you feel, and then there's how you get something done. Chabad, Chagas and Nehim. That's in Hebrew, those are the categories. Chabad, Chachma, Bina, Dat, intellect. Chagas, Chesed, Gevurah, Teferet, emotions. And Nehim, Netzach, Hod, Yesod, Malchut, those are the facilitators. Chabad, Chagas, and Nehim. Are you with me? Yes? Three categories? Okay. Feel free to divide this. Leon, you pass it back. Thank you. Feel free to divide your sheets now into this new categorization. Again, intellect, Chachma Bina Dat, Chesed Gevurah Teferet are the emotions, Netzach Hod Yesod, Malchut are the facilitators. What are facilitators? Let's explain. Okay, so we're going to begin. You'll see why I'm calling them facilitators soon as we explain Netzach. Let's begin with Netzach. Netzach is right beneath Chesed. Chesed, we explained a few weeks ago. Chesed is what? Help me out here, guys. Chesed is? Love, kindness, giving, attraction, connection, closeness. Okay. Under Chesed is Netzach. What is Netzach? Netzach is related to the word Nitzachon in Hebrew. Nitzachon. Nitzachon means victory. Winning. Victory and winning. So what is Netzach? Netzach is the drive that a person possesses to see something through to the end, to achieve their goals, and to push it all the way through to the end.
Motivation.
You need motivation.
Drive.
It's the drive.
And the discipline as well.
It's the drive, the discipline, it's whatever it takes to get something done. I wrote in the email today, I searched, you know, stats on New Year's resolutions, and something came up, so I went with it. You know what they say, 96% of stats are made up, including that one. Okay, I thought I would get more of a reaction, but it's okay, it's fine. I'm going to see this joke through to the end. That's my Netzach. I'm going to explain this, even. I won't do that. Okay, so 80% of New Year's resolutions, and I'm not talking about Rosh Hashanah resolutions in September, I'm talking about January resolutions, are already broken by February. They already fall by the wayside. Yeah, it's like everyone... Because
they're all about losing weight.
Yeah, well, that doesn't last too long. Yeah, the whole New Year's was created by the gyms in the first place. They're like, hey, let's get some revenue going. Okay, so people take New Year's resolutions and they have great intentions. Let's assume good intentions. Always good to assume good intentions. People have great intentions and they mean to follow through and they mean to see it through. By February, it is dead. It is done. It's finished. What happened? Many things could have happened. But one thing is certain. Netzach was lacking.
It was absent.
It was absent. Or it wasn't enough. What is Netzach? Netzach is seeing something through all the way to the end. Okay, so it's very important we understand what Netzach is. Netzach is the drive. Damn, please pass it down as well. Thank you. So it's the drive to see something through all the way to the end. It's not stopping until the objective, your goal, is accomplished. Victory. So, ambition is a great word. Many times, Netzach is actually called ambition. Endurance, ambition, huh?
Tenacity,
yeah, great words. These are all great adjectives adjectives for, or definitions for Netzach. Here's what I have. Endurance, commitment, dedication, persistence, tenacity, fortitude, inner strength. Basically, it's pushing all the way through to reach your objective and to stand up firmly against any and all obstacles that stand in the way. You see, there are two general categories of obstacles when it comes to fulfilling your desires or achieving your dreams or seeing your commitments through or realizing your New Year's resolution. Whatever it is, there are two general categories of things that get in the way. Internal stuff and external stuff. Right? So there's stuff on the outside, Like, I was planning on going to the gym, and then something came up at work, or something came up at the house, or something, quote unquote, out of our controls, outside of us, that we couldn't take care of. That's one category of obstacle. Another category of obstacle, general categories. Second general category are those obstacles inside of us. Right? So we thought we wanted to, and we kind of meant at the time that we wanted to do whatever it is, and then we didn't want it enough. Or we did something inside got in the way. We got in the way, or a negative thought got in the way, or a self-defeating thought got in the way, or a weak thought got in the way, whatever it is, something inside of us kind of blocked ourselves from seeing it through. Does this make sense? Does it resonate? How you can have, generally speaking, obstacles from outside and obstacles from inside. So these are what get in the way of us achieving our goals and our objectives and our resolutions. Netzach, however, Netzach is not when you make a resolution, you encounter no obstacles, and you achieve it. That is not Netzach. That is a pipe dream. That won't happen. What is Netzach? Netzach, right? That never happens. Netzach is when you encounter the obstacle. The internal obstacle, the external obstacle. You encounter the obstacle. It's not like you're not encountering the obstacle. The obstacle is approaching, and it puts itself up in front of you, and it says boo, and it scares you, and it frightens you, and you still push through it. When you can push through that obstacle, no matter what it is, you push through all the way to the end and achieve what it is that you want or need to achieve, that is the hallmark, the calling card. That is the whole deal of Netzach. Netzach is pushing it all the way through to the end, to the goal. Let's talk about athletes. There are certain athletes. There, you look at professional sports, and there are many, many. If you're in a professional sport, if you're playing professional sports, you are a top athlete. That's how you got there. But yet, within the realm of top athletes, you have certain athletes that rise to the top. They're legendary. So growing up in basketball, it was, of course, Michael Jordan. Michael Jordan was known for many things. But probably the biggest thing he was known for was his competitive spirit. Netzach is also competitiveness. It's also Netzach. Michael Jordan was known for, no matter what it is, making a bet, playing golf, basketball, baseball, didn't matter. He had to win. Right? Tiger Woods back in the day, same killer instinct. I know he got close on Sunday and the last, huh? He got close in the last few tournaments. Look, a few years ago, if he was anywhere close to the lead, he instilled the fear of God in people, in fellow golfers, and they just, you knew he was going to win. Yeah. You knew he was going to win. He would find a way to do it. That's Netzach. Netzach is finding a way to get it done. It doesn't matter what. You can have the greatest excuses, and they might be true. I have to share with you, there's the Aramaic word for excuse. This is like a Hebrew etymological discussion, so work with me. The Aramaic word for excuse is amasla. If you want to write it down, so it's aleph, mem, saf, lamed, aleph. Amasla means excuse. The commentators explain. You know what an amasla is? It's a conjunction of two Hebrew words. Emet, lo. You know what that means? Not. It's a non-truth. It might be true, it might be a true excuse, but it's really not true. In other words, it might be a good excuse, but if you're not getting it done, you're not getting it done. That's the bottom line. Either you got it done or you didn't get it done. Excuses, you have. Right? After 120 years, you want to have excuses or you want to have accomplishments, right? I'm not talking only about business or athletics or whatever it is. In life, whatever your goals are, Keter is where you set your goals. That was lesson one. So set your goals. The question now is, and that we said is setting benchmarks to achieve them and giving yourself guidance. Fine. But Netzach is the tenacity, the dedication. Netzach is the ambition, it's the internal fortitude, it's the strength that you need to see it through, the persistence, the endurance, etc., to get the job done. This is true in every area of life. Every area of life, we encounter obstacles. We encounter obstacles in relationships, we encounter obstacles in study, we encounter obstacles in being a mensch and doing the right thing and being honest. There are always obstacles, resolutions, positive resolutions, etc. There are always obstacles that we encounter. The question is not, did we have a good excuse for not doing it? The question is, did you do it anyway? That's where Netzach comes in. Netzach is seeing the job all the way to its completion. So, examples of Netzach. Athletes have certain top athletes display an incredible amount of Netzach. No matter what, getting it done. You have business people that display Netzach. By the way, this is not a commentary on whether all Netzach is healthy or unhealthy. Sometimes, oftentimes, many times, perhaps some might say a majority of the time. I don't know if I agree with that, but oftentimes Netzach goes to a very negative place, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But let's talk about the healthy forms of Netzach. So you can have healthy forms of Netzach in athletics, in business, in our personal relationships, etc. Netzach, though, is getting something done. One who has strong Netzach. Everyone has a certain measure of Netzach. But like we've said before, everyone, although everyone has these 10 soul powers, everyone has them to a different degree, different temperature. A little bit more, a little bit less, depending on who we are and what specific type of soul we possess. So for those that have a very strong Netzach, so that person will have a lot of perseverance, a lot of persistence to the very end. Some people who don't have a lot of Netzach, so they find it very difficult to complete a task. I don't mean any task. I mean to complete an involved, complicated task that requires standing up to obstacles. They will find themselves more often than not kind of folding at a certain point along the way because it got too difficult. Certain people will push all the way through, strong Netzach. Certain people at some point might say, well, yeah, it wasn't so good anyway. Maybe it wasn't such a good idea anyway, or I'll try it next time, or I couldn't, or I should have, or whatever it is. You know, the excuses come in, and again, excuses, they might be true, but they're really a maslo, they're really not. At the end of the day, they're still excuses, exactly. Still don't get the job done. Okay. Let's take a look at text number one. Text number one, our first text. Ray, please get us started. Page 148 from Rabbi Moshe Miller. And here we have, I think it's a different Moshe Miller than the other. There's two Moshe Millers. I'm sure there are many more than two Moshe Millers. But I know there's another Moshe Miller who's also kind of out there. But I think this is a different one. But who knows? Okay, text number one introduces another definition of the word Netzach.
Netzach has several meanings. Among them are victory, Nitzachon, and eternity, Nitzchiut. Common to both these ideas is the sense of the initiative and perseverance necessary in order to overcome the resistance to bringing thought and feeling into positive action. Victory assumes initiative and self-confidence. Eternity implies and
you know, I've read that text so many times, and there's so many words in that text, and I don't know that they... here's how I'm going to explain it. You ready? Okay, Netzach, related to those two words, Nitzachon, which means victory, and Nitzchiut, which means eternity, they're really the same thing. What is victory? Victory is pushing through to the end, and winning, right? It doesn't mean winning against someone else necessarily, it means being victorious in your goal, being, you know, getting to the end, getting to the finish line. And what is Nitzchiut, eternity? Eternity means something that has a long-lasting sustainability, something that is not just fly-by-night and, you know, easy come, easy go, and flares up and then fizzles out. No, nitzchiyut, eternity means something that is consistent. You know it's going to be there. You know it's always going to be. That's what eternity means. Eternity means it's there forever. So in the context of Netzach, it means someone who is, if you were going to measure their energy levels, it's not sharp peaks and big drops. That means someone who gets really excited about something and then it totally fizzles out and they don't get it done. This is someone who gets excited about something, right? And then it's sustained. It's sustained and they get it done and they push and they push and they push and they see it through to the end. It's sustained energy, and that is eternity. Eternity means something that is consistent, it's there, it's a constant, and it's going to be there at the end as well. That which is not eternal is that which fizzles out. So Netzach means seeing something through to the end, persistence, eternity, and victory. Make sense? Yes? Any questions or comments so far? Okay, I'll take that as a no. Now, Netzach follows the two primary emotions, the emotional powers of Chesed and Gevurah. You guys see that? Netzach on the chart. Netzach. So it immediately falls to Tiferet, but Tiferet, we said, is harmony of Chesed and Gevurah. In other words, the two primary emotions are Chesed and Gevurah. How did we explain Chesed and Gevurah? What was Chesed? Giving. And Gevurah was?
Space
and also withholding, right? Remember, Chesed is the open hand, Gevurah is the closed hand. Giving and withholding. For both of these attributes, the giving and the withholding, you need Netzach to be successful. If you want to give in a relationship, relationships, perhaps more than anything else, have that spike-dip dynamic to it. Relationships at the beginning are very exciting. And then it can drop. So relationships, to be successful, it requires a tenacity, requires a lot of, I don't mean that in a negative way, obviously, but it requires a lot of work to see it through, consistent hard work, persistence, perseverance, eternity, victory in the sense of seeing something through consistently all the way, I'm not saying to the end, but consistently all the way through. So chesed, giving, always will encounter obstacles. Right? You want to give, you pledge that you're going to give. Right? What's the, it's not a Jewish vow or whatever, but what's the, at least what's the Hollywood vows or whatever the vows out there in society? For better or for worse, right? What's the language?
Rich or poor,
sickness and health. But what does that imply? That implies, right, this concept of Netzach. You're pledging to be there, to give, to love, no matter what the obstacle, whether it's good or whether it's difficult. I'm going to push through and be committed and do the right thing and give and love, etc., no matter what. But giving is not always easy. That's why these obstacles are mentioned. We don't pretend like they're not mentioned. Again, it's not mentioned in the traditional, you know, Jewish ceremony necessarily, but you know, it's out there and it's a familiar refrain. The point is that relationships that are marked by chesed, by giving, require netzach to be successful. Romantic relationships, parental relationships, friendships require netzach for their success. Gevurah also demands Netzach to be successful. Gevurah, we said, healthy Gevurah, is setting limits, withholding, saying no. Saying no oftentimes requires a lot of Netzach fortitude. It's not always easy to say no. Sometimes it's very difficult. Sometimes it's tremendously difficult. I mean, think about it. Think about discipline. The very notion of discipline, putting yourself on a budget or putting yourself on a diet, whatever it is, it requires you to say no to certain things, and that's not always easy because there's always a tendency to say, well, just this one time I'm going to do this thing that I said I wasn't going to do, and then tomorrow or next time I won't do it, right? We've all been there, right? Just this one time. Gevurah is saying no in a healthy way, right? Gevurah is saying no. The challenge to Gevura, the obstacle to Gevura, is just this one time. Netzach means not this one time. Not any time. Not going to happen. Netzach is, if it's no, it's no, and I'm going to see that through. Again, I'm not telling you when to say yes, when to say no. That's another discussion. The point is, whatever you've decided is healthy chesed and healthy gevura, to stick to it requires netzach. That's why after the emotions, the primary emotions of chesed gevura and teferet, which is their harmony, after that, we have the facilitator. How do you implement? Maybe implements, I don't know what the right, you know, form of this is. Netzach is a soul energy that implements chesed and gevura. Chesed, affecting chesed, displaying chesed consistently requires netzach, and the same thing with gevura, withholding consistently and in a healthy way requires netzach to see it through. Now, so here's the big question. What is the key to netzach? Why do some keep going and others stop and some give up or give in? Right? Why is it that some people have, you know, and of course there are different soul tendencies like I mentioned before, but are there certain keys that can be learned? Is it all nature or is there some nurture as well? And is there some, are there things that you and I can learn to strengthen and build up our netzach muscle, if you will?
There have been studies done about discipline, people who are very disciplined, and the whole notion of tenacity, which are linked together. And discipline is a learned behavior. So there have been scientific studies that show that that's true.
Remember the marshmallow study? They put the marshmallow in front of the kids, and they put the camera there, and they told the kids, here's a marshmallow, but if you don't eat it for 15 minutes, I'll give you a second one. And then they walked out of the room, and they filmed the kids, and they're looking at it. Some of them eat it right away. It's like, I don't know where I'm going to be in 15 minutes. 15 minutes doesn't exist. That's not a thing. 15 minutes doesn't exist. Right? It's like, it's not even a thing. So at that point, it's irrelevant. I'm eating the marshmallow. Whatever. Some kids are like, they really want to not eat it, but they're really struggling. Like they're like looking at it. They're putting their head down on the table and kind of eyeing it from different angles. And they're touching it and poking it and picking it up and like examining it. And like, and then they just eat it. They can't. Other kids, that's it. They're holding it through. I think there's something that's learned. I do think, though, that there are certain natures of people. Certain people are born with a nature of being able to have that, in a sense, that discipline and that tenacity to see it through. Some people are a little bit more, their netzach is not as strong. The question, though, is, so what does Kabbalah say about how do we learn, what's the key to netzach, to building netzach? How do we build it? Because I agree with you, it is buildable. Question is, how do we build it, and what is at the core of Netzach that we can then try to enhance? And I think one way to look at this is by asking ourselves the question: in your life, when did you keep pushing for something, and when did you give up? If you think back, we all have moments in our lives where we did push and see something through to the end, despite the obstacles, and other times in our lives where we gave up and we said, you know what, that's it. I'm not going to get it done. I wanted to, but it's not going to happen. You know, I'm folding. That's it. I'm walking away from it. If we had to think about those moments in our lives, when we stood strong and when we walked away, are there certain kind of certain similarities that we can find between those episodes? So without getting into specifics, it's not about, you know, necessarily sharing these things. Can anybody tell me, generally speaking, in the moments that you did see something through, what differentiated those moments from the moments that you didn't see something through?
Self-analyzing, I think with me, it's proving it to myself that I could.
Okay. So it's when you felt that there was something to prove.
Yeah.
Okay.
Other people.
What determined whether or not you wanted to prove that to yourself?
Because I guess I didn't know if I could or not.
So things that you know you could, you don't need to.
Right.
It's already that you know already. Something. So it's something new. Okay, good.
The value of the outcome. And so what I mean by that is, if by caving it was going to violate something that was of a very high value to me, it was easier for me to stand strong.
Good.
Whereas if it was something that really didn't have much of a value attached,
so straight up, it's about importance. Yeah. The more important, if it's really important, then we'll see it through.
Right.
If it's not so important, we'll find excuses. And if something comes up, it's like, well, yeah, it wasn't so important anyway. Good. Okay. Good. Yeah.
Because the deadline was immediate versus when it wasn't.
Okay. So if you feel it and it's really the pressure's on, then you're saying you're more likely to see it through as opposed to if it's something that's protracted.
Put it off one day.
Yeah.
Being able to put it off one day, which led to a long time.
Right. Okay. Okay, good.
I would say trust. If you can trust a person, okay. But if you can't, it's over.
Okay.
Got
it. Okay, good. Yes.
Identifying important things that you're passionate about and then deciding to do something versus being overwhelmed by, oh, there's too many things. So I, you know, select one project and then.
So basically making it manageable.
And whittle it down into a project. Well, decide to do something versus being overwhelmed. Pick one item, because there's so many different things we can get involved in, but making it a project. Because when it's a project, then we know the outcome. And it's a short-term thing versus this big, huge, massive decision.
Okay, good. Good. Interesting.
An internal project that has no external.
Interesting.
Deadline. It's really much harder for me to.
So if it's coming from something or someone else, you find that activates your netzach a little bit more than if you are. Interesting. Okay. I imagine some people might find the opposite, that if they're generating it, they're more likely to get through. But if somebody else is telling them, it's like, whatever.
Yeah,
okay.
I can stay up all night.
So I was going to ask you, what makes it something that you get excited about? And it's bottom line, whatever is speaking to you or getting you excited. Okay, good.
I was thinking that experience, if you have a couple of experiences in your life where you do finish it and have that victory, then when you come up against an obstacle, you can say, oh yeah, I'm going to stay with this and follow it through.
Because I've seen it work before. You're saying that experience. Okay, good. Yes.
And to her point, that could be something like, oh, in the past I broke it down into smaller bites. Just like the example, if you realize how much food you consume in your lifetime, you say, I gotta consume 6,000 tons of food. I can't do that. I'll never be able to do it.
Right.
But if you do it in bite size.
Piece by piece.
Piece by piece, day by day, you're breaking it down into smaller quantum leaps.
Along those lines, we had a speaker here a few years ago who spoke. She spoke about her personal story, and she's gone through many tragedies in her life, loss of children, etc. She spoke about getting through difficulty, challenges, tragedy, day by day, just little pieces at a time.
Yeah.
And she mentioned a study that had come out recently. Some college students did the study, or grad students. They did a study where they ate a wood chair.
They what?
They ate a chair.
Uh-huh.
They ate a chair.
Yeah.
Little by little.
Yeah.
They ground it down. Yeah. I know, right? A wood chair. They ate a wood chair. But they didn't just...
It's doable.
You may want to hire them, right?
Yeah, exactly, right? So they...
It's doable.
Yeah, it's doable. And how do you do it? Yeah, they put in their food. They sprinkled some of the sawdust in their food, and yeah, that's how they did it. It took them a long time. I guess they had 4 years or something.
No, that's
2 years.
A valuable tool. That's a valuable tool
to making it work, to overcoming the obstacles.
Yeah.
Good.
Having a memory of that experience and working for you.
Yeah. Okay, good. Let's present some Kabbalistic wisdom on this, and you'll see how some of the ideas that are mentioned we can weave into the Kabbalistic notion of it. Okay, let's begin with a story. Before the story. Forget the story. Don't forget the story. We'll get the story soon. Here's the big idea. Netzach is usually marked by a strong belief in something that doesn't allow the person to even see the obstacle. In other words, really strong netzach. This is one definition, not the only definition, but really strong netzach oftentimes is marked by the experience when you see and believe and want that thing so deeply and so completely and wholly that you don't even see the obstacle. In other words, to you, this is not even an obstacle. You know the stories of the moms who lift up cars?
Yes.
It's not a car anymore. It can't get in the way. At that moment, it's not like it's in the way, what do I do? It can't be in the way. And so it's not in the way. It's almost a decision, a resolution that a person takes, person makes in their mind with every fiber of their being that they want this, they need this, they believe that they can accomplish this, and nothing else exists. Nothing else exists. Let's take a look. So the more you believe in something, the more you believe in it, the more dedicated you are to that goal, the less you see the obstacle. Let's take a look at text number 2, page 148. Here's a story about Abraham. The story about Abraham and the binding of Isaac. Do we all know the story of the binding of Isaac? I'll give you the brief summary of it. So basically, Abraham, who waited for many years, Abraham and Sarah together, they waited for decades, many years, till they were very old, to have a child. Finally, they were blessed with a child. And then, at a certain point in time, God says to Abraham, take your child and bring him up on a mountain as an offering. And at that point, everything that Abraham believes in is tested. See, Abraham was the father of monotheism, and he taught against human sacrifice. That's one of the things that they would do to pagan gods in their worship, is that they would have human sacrifice. And Abraham taught, no human sacrifice. God does not want your human sacrifice. And now God is telling him, bring up your son as an offering. And so now everything that he's taught, imagine if he goes ahead with it and he comes down the mountain and people are like, hey, Abraham, how's Isaac doing? Haven't seen him in a while. What's he up to? About that. Yeah, God told me. Yeah, God said. Really, Abraham? What a hypocrite, right? So his whole thing, all of his life work is out the window. This was a true test. By the way, famously, right, he brings Isaac up on the mountain as an offering, and then God says through an angel, I never said to sacrifice him as an offering, I said bring him up as an offering. Now that you brought him up, take him down. He's good, right? That's the old, pay attention to language. God never said kill him. God said bring him up. You brought him up, take him down. Go out for pizza. Have fun. Go for ice cream. It's all good. Okay, so here we have the story of the journey. The Midrash in the Torah, it just says that he journeyed and he saw the mountain and he brought him up and took him out. But the Midrash gives us a little bit more details about what happened along the journey. Alana, please read text number 2.
On the third day, Abraham looked up and saw the place from afar. On their way to Mount Moriah, their path was blocked by a big river. Undeterred, Abraham immediately waded into the river until the water came up to his knees. He told the lads accompanying him to follow him, and they also waded into the river. Halfway through the river, the water was up to his neck. At that moment, Abraham raised his eyes to heaven and said, Master of the world, you appeared to me and told me to offer up my son Yitzhak before you. I did not protest. Here I am, occupied with fulfilling your command, but the water has almost reached to my soul. If I or my son Yitzhak should die, who will fulfill your words? The Holy One, blessed be He, replied, "By your life, through you, my name will be unified into the world." Immediately, the river dried up, and they stood on dry land.
I want you to think about this text, and it's very interesting. Before I ask the questions, so the core ideas here is that as Abraham is walking, journeying to the mountain, where he will bring Isaac up as an offering, so a river appears and obstructs him. How does Abraham respond? What does he say? Goes into the river. He doesn't go around the river. He doesn't build a raft or build a boat. He doesn't do that. He just goes, straight into the river. And then at a certain point, what happens? It gets really high. It gets up to his neck, up to his nose, or up to his neck. And at that point, what does he say?
If I drown, I won't be able to
go. How do you characterize, what's the turning point of the story? What is the catalyst for the river drying up? What's the catalyst? But it's a little bit more than that. It's not just wanting. What does he do? What else? Say it again.
He's on his way.
He's on his way, so he's doing it. But that it doesn't split when he walks into it. That still doesn't do it. Dry up. What makes it dry up? Questions it. In other words, he's questions God, but in a broader context, what he's doing is he's questioning the possibility of this obstacle to be in the way. For him, there cannot be an obstacle to God's will. God told him to go, and that's where he needs to go. This can't be in the way. And the moment he decides, and he verbalizes, right? The moment he articulates to himself and to the world that this cannot stand in the way, it doesn't stand in the way anymore. It disappears. What it takes from us to overcome the challenge is to tell ourselves and to tell the world, if it takes that, this will not be a challenge. You see, people that have experienced tremendous hardship and challenge in their life, and they refuse to accept it, and they accomplish amazing things. You know why? Because they challenged it. They refused to accept the challenge. They never said, "Well, this is the challenge. I guess I'm fated to be underneath this challenge." They didn't accept it. There are people and countless examples. I have like a dozen examples of different scenarios, different types of scenarios in my mind. Doesn't matter. You can all come up with one on your own. People who refuse to accept the challenge as a challenge. They say, I refuse to accept it. I'm not going to be subjugated to the challenge. I will keep on moving, and by virtue of that commitment to seeing it through, they see it through. But for Abraham, I ask the question, what does it take to see something through? What is the difference between getting it done and stalling? For Abraham, it was commitment to the cause, to God's call. For Abraham, this was not a journey up the mountain because he heard that it's a great hike. Right? He's like, wow, Mount Moriah, it's got a great view. Let me see what everyone's talking about. Then if a river appears, maybe he's like, you know what? Let's just go home. We'll do it another day when the river dries up. What a weird situation that the river should suddenly appear. Oh well, let's go home. It must be a sign. Let's get out of here. For Abraham, right? It must be a sign. For Abraham, that's not an option. You see, Abraham is dedicated, heart and soul, mind and body. Abraham is dedicated to one thing, to God, to Hashem. That's it. That's his whole why and wherefore. His whole being of existence is God. In the language of the Kabbalists, he was a Merkava. Merkava means a chariot. I know. You and I don't ride on horse and buggies and chariots anymore. Okay, so it's an outdated analogy. But a chariot means, when you're riding on a chariot, the chariot itself, the wagon itself, doesn't have its own will to go where it wants to go. It's like a car. The car goes where you drive it, unless it's an older car, and then sometimes it tells you where to go, and that's another thing. But a healthy car, it's a vehicle, it's a transparent vessel vehicle to get you where you want to go. So you push the pedal, you turn the wheel, right? You do your thing, and it follows the lead. It doesn't get in the way. Abraham was purely attuned to God's will. And so God says, go to the mountain and bring him up. And Abraham said, I'm going to the mountain and I'm bringing him up. Now there's a river. Abraham says, there can't be a river. God, there can't be a river, right? You told me to go. I'm going. How could there be a river? And the river disappears. When you decide that there can't be an obstacle, there isn't an obstacle. I know what you're thinking. But sometimes there's objectively an obstacle. Yes, you're right. Sometimes there's objectively an obstacle. However, what that obstacle means, and does it slow you down? Does it stop you? Does it stop you from attaining your goals? Again, I have a dozen things in my head, in mind about people who anyone else could have said that thing happened to them, their dreams are gone. Their dreams are finished. They can't accomplish that anymore. Right? Remember the surfer? The young girl who was surfing off the coast of California? Who's, I think, huh? Yeah. I think her arm was, her leg, something was, the shark. Right? Something. She's back out there surfing. Again, certain things in life are objective. In other words, it happened, it's a reality. Okay, fine. But a person can still accomplish. You may have to go a little bit this way or that way, but you can still accomplish. Netzach means you keep on going. You don't stop just because of the obstacle. What's the key? The key is believing in the cause, wanting something deeply, not just wanting it a little bit. You see, the key is desire, how much you want it. If you really want it, Abraham really wanted it. If you really want it, it's not an obstacle. The more you see the goal, the less you see the obstacle. It's kind of like focus, how the eyes focus. Right? You ever have a camera and your with a manual lens focus? And so when you focus on the object at a distance, so the foreground gets blurry, and then when you focus on the stuff close to you, the background gets blurry, right? What are you focusing on? You're focusing on the goal, then all the stuff in the way, it's a little blurry. It doesn't really make a difference. You're not really seeing it. We'll get over this. We'll get past this. It's fine. It's not an obstacle. But if you're focused on, if you don't really know, if you can't picture, if you can't envision the goal, if the goal is more theoretical than the obstacle, then you're likely to get stuck with the obstacle. So the key that Abraham teaches us is be obsessed with the goal. Believe in what you're doing. If you believe in what you're doing, you want to do what you're doing, then the obstacle, and you tell yourself this can't be an obstacle, it won't be an obstacle. You'll find a way how to do it. So that's one message from one story, the story of Abraham. Now let's segue into another story. Oh, by the way, I need to mention another Kabbalistic teaching before we get to the story of Rabbi Akiva. The Kabbalists tell us something else that is absolutely just mind-blowing. The Kabbalists teach that the definition of a challenge, is something that God puts in front of us to bring out within us our deepest powers and abilities. And the moment we realize the purpose of the obstacle serves no purpose anymore and it can disappear. We grant it permission to leave. Are you with me on this? I'll say it again. The obstacle only exists to allow us to rise above it, to summon inner strength, to tap into our true potential and soul power. That is the only purpose of the obstacle, not to drive us crazy and to torture us. God is not in the torturing business. God is in the strengthening business. So God is giving us an obstacle, the Kabbalists say, to evoke within us, to allow us to reach in and pull out greater strength. The moment we achieve that, is the moment the obstacle is not needed anymore. Because remember, it was only needed to be the catalyst for us to draw that, to summon that greater, that deeper energy. The moment we summon the deeper energy, the greater energy, is the moment the challenge no longer is necessary to exist. So if you want that river to disappear in your life, the more credence you give the river, And the more the river gets in your way, the more it's going to exist. Because you still haven't achieved what it exists for. You haven't realized why it's there in the first place. The river, in other words, you're running down the Beltline, and then you see that somebody put a wall, a barrier in front of you. And you say to yourself, who does that? Sugar, who puts a barrier in the middle of the Beltline? It's like, what am I supposed to do now? So you stop. You're running, you stop. And you look at it. And you pull out your phone, you call 311. Why? Who knows? No one knows. Does 311 do anything? We don't know. That's the city, right? Is that the city? No. The city, no. You're not going to call 9. It's not an emergency. No. We're not going to harass 911. That's off the table. 311. 311. Okay, so I feel like this should be an educational class. All right, put down your pencils. I'm joking. So 311 is the number for the city. City resources. If you have a city issue, like, you know, somebody left those bird scooters on your front lawn and you got a problem with that, so you call 311 and they tell you, here's your ticket number, right? Here's your thing. You get your, what do they call it? Not a ticket number. Your case number, and then you never get called back. And that's the way it works. That's the way it works. You have a case number, and you follow up, like, yeah, we have it, it's documented. So what's going to happen? Nothing. It's documented, but look, at least it's documented. It's on the record. I'm speaking only half in jest. I'm speaking mainly in truth. We had it doesn't matter. Garbage wasn't picked up for weeks. Okay. Doesn't matter. But it does. I'll tell you, it was terrible. Okay. So, you call 311. Guess what happens with the wall? You're on the Beltline and there's a wall in front of you and you stop running because there's a wall. What happens? You call 301. Still there. Right? You tell all the people around you, look at this. Who does this? You start kvetching in public. That's really Jewish. Kvetching is Jewish, but kvetching in public amongst strangers, that's really Jewish, right? It's like, what is this? Who puts up a wall? How dare they? What am I supposed to do, right? It's so Jewish. What happens? How's the wall doing?
It's solid.
Still there. Not going anywhere. Guess what? You walk back a little bit. You get a running start, and you jump over the wall. Guess what happened? The wall no longer... Allison, well done. I'm going to point to the dessert table. Whatever you want is yours. An extra chart, yes. A laminated chart. I can't promise that. I don't have a laminated. You overcame the wall. In other words, so the wall now doesn't exist. It's in your rearview mirror. It doesn't exist. It disappeared. But not only did it disappear, it achieved its purpose. You see, the Heverman, the guy who put the wall there, had an objective. Not to stop people, but to teach them how to soar. To take them to a greater height than before. That is the objective of I'm not saying that the Nudnik on the Beltline who did that. That guy should get hauled off and, you know, somewhere and whatever. But I'm saying how you and I could look at it. Perception is reality, okay? That the guy who put it there, the intention was to allow us to soar. The way the Kabbalists see the world. Everything in the world. If there's a challenge, it's a hurdle. It's not an obstacle. It's meant to allow you, to teach you, to enable you, to encourage you to jump, to teach you how to fly, to teach you how to overcome. If you never had a hurdle, you'd never leave the ground. Thank God for the hurdles. They allow you to reach the ground. Again, mystically, the Kabbalists say, on a spiritual energy level, everything exists for a purpose. When it achieves its purpose, it no longer needs to exist. So if the challenge in your life is intended, and the Kabbalists say it's only intended, to allow you to kind of push you to reach deeper inside, as long as you haven't, it's still going to be there. It's still going to bother you. It's still going to poke you. It's still going to kvetch you, squeeze you. It's still going to be there. As long as you haven't, I'm not going to say to learn the lesson from it. It's more than that. As long as you haven't summoned the extra deeper power because of it, okay, it still exists. The moment you realize its true purpose, it no longer needs to exist. You've already done it. You've already achieved it. You've already realized its purpose and it no longer exists on two levels. Because you've overcome it and because it doesn't need to exist anymore.
What about tragedy?
Tragedy, when we talk about tragedy and literal loss, so that is something. Loss is not anything that can be replaced. Loss is objective. Loss is objective. The question, the only part of this that is up for this discussion is about how we respond to the loss that we've experienced. In other words, the loss itself is, it's like I heard, we had a speaker a few years ago, Shimona Tsukernik. Some of you might have been there. She was absolutely incredible. She spoke about her own story and tragedy that she's endured in her life. This is a different speaker than the chair speaker. She mentioned that for her, one of the turning points in her life and getting past, she was broken from that tragedy. She couldn't function. She said what a transformative moment for her is when she differentiated in her mind the difference between pain and suffering. Pain being the objective pain and the loss, and the suffering, which is all of the stuff that she was putting on herself because of that. It was because of the loss, therefore I can't do this, or I am that, or I've... All of the storyline, the narrative about that, about the pain, would be the suffering, and that's something that she, for herself, she decided that's what she was putting on herself. And in that context, and I think it's true for us as well, in many cases, there's the objective fact of what happens, and then there is what that means for us. And I think that's where we're a little bit open to this idea. In other words, we're not able to bring back a loss. That's not possible. You can't bring back someone who's been taken, who's passed on. You can't bring that back. Certain things that are absolute on that level. And that's the greatest absolute. Life and death is the greatest absolute. But what we can do is find an energy, a depth, a power because of or in despite of or we can summon a strength from that lifts us to a higher place than before. Not that we would ever trade the extra strength, the deeper strength for that experience, but once it's happened, it's almost like suffering is the gap between what we expected and what the reality is. So the reality is pain. The reality is painful. The suffering part is kind of holding on to what we wanted, what we expected, what we would have liked, and the dissonance between that and what is where the suffering happens. Like when we tell ourselves, but it wasn't supposed to be like this. I was supposed to have this and that time, or whatever that narrative is. But that expectation or the gap between what we have and what should have been, that's where that suffering comes in. So part of it is recognizing recognizing the full reality of what is. We spoke about this at length. This is a theme that we developed over the course of a lesson or two in a few different courses, past courses, on life and death and afterlife. And we had Journey of the Soul and Soul Quest and other courses that focus specifically on this. So I'm not doing justice to the topic by doing a very quick treatment of it. But I think the quick point is that there is a strong part of it. There is a major piece of it for us where there is a growth component to it. Not that we would ever trade it in for what happened. It doesn't make it worth it. It doesn't make it right or good or justified. Never. But it is what if this is what's in front of us, then at that point we still have the choice to seek to find some sort of growth from that, despite it, through it, with it, around it, however that works.
Do the Catholics consider tragedies as obstacles?
I think tragedy is more than an obstacle, but the aftermath of tragedy.
Oh, completely agree that those are separate and distinct things.
Yeah, I would say a tragedy is on a higher level than an obstacle. Yeah, tragedy is not just a challenge. A tragedy is a tragedy, much more than that. Yeah.
Are you talking about finding ways to accept the unacceptable?
I think that's I alluded to that. That's definitely part of managing the suffering. Part of it is embracing the reality. And then once you embrace the reality, the question is, well, now what? Now what do I do? I can't undo what's happened. I mean, if I can, maybe I can. But when I come to grips with I experience what I experienced, or what happened. The question is, now what do I do about it? And can I grow from this, through this, despite this, you know, in defiance of this, whatever it is, but can I find some sort of growth surrounding this? And that achieves a purpose, not to justify it in case of tragedy, but that achieves some measure of purpose in that.
So you're saying that she was able to differentiate between objective loss,
yes,
and suffering,
and what that means. And what she said specifically is she was engaged a few weeks before the wedding to a man. It was a few weeks before the wedding. She loved him dearly. And he was killed in a car accident. And she was finished. Because she had all these plans. And she had the apartment. And she had the furniture. And everything was ready. And wedding dress. And everything. A whole life laid out. In an instant. With a phone call. In an instant. Done. And she couldn't get out of bed.
I think that's important to talk about the time, too.
Yeah. It's definitely a process. For sure it's a process, especially with grieving. That's why what we're speaking about is, I would say, more of the everyday challenges and obstacles. We have suffering and tragedy. I think that's higher level, but I don't want to just dismiss it either to something that's not relevant to our discussion, because I think it's important to understand that even in the realm of suffering and tragedy, there are pieces to it that we can grow through and from. Anyway, we still have a lot to get to. So let's move on to the second story. The second story we have here about Netzach put into action is the incredible and inspiring story of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva, I'll tell you the end of the story. Not the end. He has a tragic end. He's tortured to death by the Romans. But okay, before that end of it, the positive end of his story is that he becomes one of the greatest Torah scholars and Torah teachers of all time, and he has an academy of 24,000 students. He is an incredible scholar, incredible teacher, mentor to thousands, and one of the prime architects, if you will, of the oral tradition. Now, how did Rabbi Akiva begin? Susan, please read text number 3.
What were Akiva's beginnings? It is said, up to the age of 40, he had not yet studied a thing. One time, while standing by the mouth of a well in Lod, he inquired, "Who howled out?" Akiva, haven't you read in scripture that water rolls away stone? It was water from the well falling upon it constantly day after day. At that, Rabbi Akiva asked himself, is my mind harder than this stone? I will go and study at least one section of Torah. He went directly to the schoolhouse and took his son and began reading from a child's tablet. Rabbi Akiva took hold of one end of the tablet, and his son took hold of the other end. The teacher wrote down Aleph and Beth for him, Aleph to Tav, and he learned them. The book of Vayikra, he learned it. He went on studying until he knew the entire written Torah. Then he went and sat before Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua. My masters, he said to them, reveal the logic of Mishnah to me. He told him one ruling, he went off and used it by himself. He kept coming back, kept inquiring of Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua until he reduced his teachers to silence. Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer said, I shall tell you a parable to illustrate what Akiva did. He was like a stone cutter hacking away at a mountain. He hit the wall.
So many walls now. Now that we're looking for it, walls everywhere. Now, Rabbi Akiva did not know how to read Hebrew until the age of 40. He did not, he had never studied. He was a shepherd, simple shepherd. Famously, he was inspired to learn through the woman that he married. So she said, I'll marry you, but on condition that you learn something. He said, I can't learn. That was his narrative. His narrative was like, I can't, my head is too, I don't understand stuff. I don't have a scholarly mind. Torah scholars, these guys are brilliant and smart. In fact, what's cut out from this, the Talmud says, Rabbi Akiva himself said, it's quoted in the Talmud, that when I used to see scholars, Torah scholars, I used to have such disdain. I don't know if he said that he would look at them with scorn or even spit at them, whatever. He hated them. He wasn't like them. He hated them. He despised scholars. Till 40, he couldn't read Hebrew. He didn't know the alphabet. At 40, he said, you know what, I'm doing this. And he achieved. And he became, like I said, one of the most prolific scholars and teachers in Jewish history. What was the turning point? So I know what you're going to say. The story of him seeing the water drip on the rock, hollowing out the rock. And he said, if water can cut through stone, the words of Torah can cut through my mind that's made of stone and penetrate. If I'm consistent day after day, it can also get through. The story was a little bit of the turning point, but what's the immediate turning point? Second paragraph, first line. At that, Rabbi Akiva asked himself, is my mind harder than this stone? What did Abraham say? God, what did he say? If I or my son Isaac should die, who will fulfill your words? Rabbi Akiva says, is my mind harder than this stone? In both cases, the two individuals are questioning the challenge. They're questioning the possibility for the challenge to exist. Abraham says, God, you told me to go. How can there be this challenge? Rabbi Akiva says, until now I thought my mind was a stone, and because it's a stone, it's impenetrable, it can't contain wisdom. But now I see that even a literal stone is not impervious to, is not impenetrable. Even a literal stone, is my mind harder than a stone? It's challenging the challenge that creates the breakthrough. Netzach means that when you look at the challenge, you ask yourself the question, and if it takes verbalizing, verbalize it. Is this really a challenge? Or is it only a perceived challenge? Is it a real challenge? Or is it my story that I made up at a certain point, either because someone told me, or I told myself, or I tried once and I couldn't? You know how they have elephants in the circus? I'm not advocating for circuses. That's another discussion. Tigers are... Okay. But they used to have elephants in a circus held by a thin rope. And you look at the elephant, and the elephant's massive. And you ask yourself the question, how is it possible that the elephant is held in place by this rope? And the answer is because when the elephant was young, they tied the elephant to the rope. And when the elephant was really young, a baby elephant, and it tried to break away, the rope then was strong enough to hold the elephant back. And day after day it tried and it failed. And so then it created an association. Rope means I can't go. And even when it became a massive elephant that could easily rip the rope and whatever it's attached to, totally break it with ease, its narrative is, I can't. And then it becomes a challenge. Is it real? Of course it's real. It's real in its mind. In Rabbi Akiva's mind, he couldn't study. He wasn't a scholar. Then he became a scholar. All it took for him was to ask himself the question, to challenge himself, is my mind incapable of study? The moment he asked himself that question, and he concluded, no, this was a false narrative. Challenge the supposition of the assumption. The moment he challenged it, he had the breakthrough. Are you with me on this? What is Netzach? Netzach is seeing something through to the end. Those that have strong Netzach challenge the challenge. When the challenge comes their way, they ask themselves the question, who says it's a challenge? How dare you challenge me? Who says this is a challenge in the first place? Because you look like a challenge, big deal. I don't consider it a challenge. If you don't consider it, again, not speaking about the objective realities and losses, okay. But the other challenges. If you don't consider it to be a challenge, it's not a challenge. It's as much as you give it credence. The more you fuel it, the more it is. The less you fuel it, the less it is. So the bottom line is, when it comes to Netzach is that the moment we tell ourselves there's no challenge, the challenge ceases to be as big as we thought it was. One second. Yeah.
I just wanted to say, and I've heard this phrase many times since, we spent a long time, many years ago, hanging out with a group of survivors in Omaha. And I became very friendly with Miriam Grossman, a blessed memory, who had survived Auschwitz, who was a brilliant woman, who could speak seven languages, and her family was extremely well-educated, and she was brought up anyway. And they came to Omaha, and they were very poor, and she was a seamstress. And I was having her do something for me one day, and I said to her, Mrs. Wilson, how can you, who's so serene and had no malice whatsoever, anyway, but she said to me, this is the first time I heard the phrase, she said, darling, God doesn't give us more than we can handle. So if you look at it from her perspective, then there aren't any obstacles because we can handle whatever is in front of us. And I believe that that's how she survived.
Yep. That decision, determination. A lot of this has to do with a solid sense of self-worth and self-esteem. To believe in yourself. To believe in yourself more than you believe in the challenge. You see, we all believe in something. I once saw a letter. Somebody wrote to Lubavitcher Rebbe that, oh yeah, I don't, God and religion, spirituality, I don't believe. I'm a scientific type of person. I don't believe in things. So the Rebbe said, you ever went in an airplane? Yeah, you ever flown in an airplane? Okay. How do you know that the pilot is trained? You saw the documentation? How do you know the airplane is worthy of flying? You inspected it yourself? You would know what to look for to inspect it? Let me guess. You believed that the FAA and, you know, everyone's doing their job. Okay, fine. So you believe. Everyone believes. Everyone suspends logic at some point and puts their faith in something. And so the point here is, instead of putting our faith and belief in the obstacle and believing, putting credence in the obstacle, we need to put credence and belief in ourselves. There is an absolutely moving text, text number 5. It's a really long text. I'm going to read it. I'll read it very fast. And I'm going to cut out some stuff, I think, along the way. Dr. Abraham Tversky, it's relevant in the context of self-esteem and self-worth and not being self-defeating. Because part of Netzach, the challenge to Netzach is being self-defeating. Really, the opposite of Netzach is self-defeating. It's like I had a goal, I wanted to accomplish it, and then I got in the way of myself because I believed too much in the challenge and I made it too big of a thing for me to overcome. So, like, I can't get out of this because I'm stuck. Netzach would be to go all the way through, but I can't because I'm stuck. So let's read text 5 very quickly. Remember, Dr. Tversky, you can look at his bio. A young woman was admitted for treatment because of her heroin addiction. All her veins had become obstructed from injecting herself with narcotics, which resulted in multiple abscesses. This otherwise attractive woman was a pathetic sight because of the many lesions. In the admission interview, she told me that she was a nurse and had easy access to drugs. She had used sedatives for insomnia and Percocet for menstrual cramps. These were taken on her own, not prescribed by a physician. She became addicted to both medications, and when she feared that the hospital would note that drugs were missing, she began using street drugs, eventually gravitating toward heroin. The narcotic habit resulted in her being unable to work, and after using up all her savings, she sold everything, including herself, for money to buy drugs. I noted that she was wearing a locket and asked her why she had not sold it for heroin. She said that it was her mother's and she would never part with it. I asked her to show it to me. After she handed it to me, I picked up a sharp instrument and acted as if I were about to scratch the locket. Are you with me on this? Okay, what are you doing, she asked with a tone of panic. Just scratching it up a little bit, I said. Why do you want to do that? Oh, it's just something I like to do, but it's mine. I know, I'll give it back to you, but I don't want it all scratched up. It's beautiful and it's valuable to me. You mean that when something has beauty and value, you do not allow it to be marred and ruined, I asked? Then taking her hands and showing her the bruises and abscesses, I said, don't you see what this says? These self-inflicted wounds are a loud statement that says, I am not beautiful, I have no value. People who do not have a sense of self-worth are prone to do destructive things to themselves or to inadvertently allow themselves to be injured. Overcoming self-defeating behavior requires self-esteem. Many problems that bring a person to a psychotherapist's office are the result of this kind of self-devaluation. Sustained recovery from any self-destructive lifestyle requires a change of attitude, one that promotes a positive rather than a negative self-image. And I think that we can tie this into our discussion. The more we believe in ourselves and have a positive outlook on who we are and what we can accomplish, the more beautiful we look at ourselves, the more prone, the more likely we are to see our goals through to the end and to not get stuck. Because getting stuck is harming us from what we want and perhaps need to do.
Another thing I wanted to say about Netzach is related to this. To see that, to do something and to see it through to the end, is to see that we're uniquely qualified for that thing. And
yes,
very often it's an underserved cause.
Yes.
That if we don't do it, we're the man. We're the woman. We're feeling it. We know it.
If we don't do it, no one can do it.
This is
a major, thank you for sharing that. This is a major Jewish teaching. The Talmud says at length, why is it that Adam was created alone and unique, Adam and then Eve? But why were human beings created just basically singular, as opposed to other species of animals or other creatures, animals, trees, birds that were created in multitude? Adam and Eve, or Adam at least first, was created as a single unit. And the Talmud says, so that everyone should say the following, Bishvili Nivra HaOlam, just like the world is created for Adam, for me the world is created, which means the world is riding on my shoulders. There are things that I need to do that no one else can pick up the slack. If I don't get it done, no one can get it done. So talk about, Allison, you mentioned having a need. Someone needs you, so you feel like, okay, I got to get it done. Like, there's no, if it's me, maybe, you know, I have some wiggle room, but if it needs to get done, so what, yeah, I think what Yaakov is saying is God needs you and I to get something done. That's it. No wiggle room. Of course, that's talking about moral, spiritual things and positive things in this world that we should not allow obstacles to get in the way. Okay, so that is enough, not enough. That's about positive netzach and how we can leverage that to accomplish great things. There is a negative, ugly form of netzach. Okay, there is a negative form of netzach. And that is mentioned in text 14a, 14b, 15a, no, I'm sorry, 15a, 15b, 16a, and 16b. There's a negative form of netzach, and that is when a person wants to win at all costs, even if it means hurting someone else. So this means stomping on someone else, hurting someone else, just to win. James, please read text 15a and 15b. And 15b.
A person determines firmly in his heart to hate his fellow man because he harmed him. Until he can repay him in kind for his bad deed, he violates this negative precept.
So if somebody does something that you don't like to you, and then you say, well, that's it, it's coming back to you, I'm going to do something to get you back, that's straight up revenge. The Torah says, don't take revenge, do not exact revenge. It's a biblical prohibition. Even if it's on some level justified, it's not kosher according to Jewish law. And the idea here is that netzach gone bad is the idea. One form of netzach going bad is taking revenge. You did this to me, I'm going to see to it that you get your just desserts. I'm going to make sure that you feel what you did to me, that you're going to feel that someday. That's a form of netzach, unhealthy netzach. Stomping on someone, stepping on someone, you know, hurting people on the way, climbing the ladder of success or whatever it is, ladder in business. All of those would be examples of netzach leveraged and utilized in a negative way. Let's talk about, we have just 5 minutes left, perfect amount of time to deal with another whole sphere, another whole soul power, that of Hod. Perfect amount of time, exactly what I wanted to leave it with. Okay, so Hod. What is Hod? Hod is a cross from Netzach. You have Netzach, which is ambition, it's pushing, it's tenacity, it's endurance, it's victory. And on the opposite side, you have Hod. Hod is the exact opposite of Netzach. Netzach is pushing. Hod is
pulling
or yielding. So Netzach says, again, I'm not advocating this as being healthy Netzach, but one measure of Netzach might be, this is the movie that I want to see. My dear, this is what we're going to see. And I will see to it that this is what we're going to watch. That's Netzach. I'm not saying it's healthy Netzach, but that's an example of Netzach. Right? What you want, you're pushing through. That's not a healthy example of Netzach. Okay? Hod is, what would you like to do? Right? Hod is yielding to someone else. Netzach is when you come to that, on Johnson Road when you're coming from Toco Hills. You guys know what I'm talking about? Johnson Road, you're coming from Toco, and you approach where Lennox Road comes up, and Johnson Road, and Lennox Road, and those guys have the yield sign, and you don't have the yield sign, so you're gunning it, but they're also trying to get in. Some people don't look at that yield sign, so now it's just straight up a convergence of cars, and it's a whole thing, and you don't know what to do. So Netzach is, you're going. That guy? Whatever. Get out of my way. I'm going. Hod is, I'm yielding. Yeah, you go first. I don't need to go first. So Hod is yielding as opposed to Netzach. Yeah, for sure. Hod is saying, I'm acknowledging you. It's not just me pushing. I'm acknowledging your existence, your right to exist. What you want, I'm acknowledging, right? So it's all about acknowledgement. It's also, Hod is also synonymous with the idea of humility. I know we spoke about humility in the context of Chachma, and being a mensch in general requires humility, but Hod is, in a strong sense, the idea of humility. Hod is letting something else or someone else. It's also about devotion and dedication to a cause. You know, Netzach is pushing your agenda or what you want, your goals, through to the end. Hod is almost dedicated to a higher calling where it requires not only you pushing, but you, in a sense, surrendering to the cause. It's you saying, there's a need, I'm going to surrender. And on some level, you can say, well, that's what Abraham was doing. He was surrendering to God's call. And it might be Hod also. I don't want to blur the lines too much, but I think that Abraham seeing, Abraham walking into the river, that's Netzach. But in general, heeding a higher call might also be the notion of Hod, which is acknowledgement of something else and ceding, yielding to something else. It could be very healthy, it could be unhealthy, right? Submission might be unhealthy, but it could be very healthy at the same time. I was thinking of an example of Hod as I was speaking. Hod being yielding.
It doesn't mean yield to the obstacle, correct?
No. That's a lack of Netzach. Healthy Hod is where, oh, I know what it is. Some people sometimes some people are able to yield and to surrender to a cause, but the moment they find out that someone else is not, it goes out the window. It's like, sure, I'll be dedicated, but how come you're not dedicated? So then why should I be dedicated if you're not dedicated? That's not real dedication. Are you with me on this?
Yeah.
So being dedicated means that you're dedicated. Hod is dedicated, dedication, devotion, yielding, surrendering, humility. It's all of that. And it's for the cause, notwithstanding what anyone else is doing or wherever where anyone else is. It's not about anyone else. It's about me and doing what is right. So Hod is also related to the notion of acknowledgement. I think I may have mentioned that already. Acknowledgement. In other words, I'm acknowledging that there's something else. There's someone else who's driving. There's something else, a greater cause. There's something else. There's someone else. I'm acknowledging something that I ought to do, even if I'm not particularly interested in doing it. Hod means that I have the ability to do it. So Netzach is, I have a strong belief. I have a strong desire, and I'm going to see it all the way through. Hod is saying, I may not want this, but I have the ability to yield to it and to therefore put an effort to do it. It's not just passive. Hod is not just passive. Like, okay, you go. I'll just sit down. That's not. Hod is also me doing something, but out of a sense of submission. I'm submitting to something higher, something greater, someone else. So that submission is active, but it's in the modality of humility. Hod is also the key to gratitude. You see, the moment you acknowledge something else or someone else, you can feel their presence and you can appreciate what it is that they are offering or bringing to the table. So if I'm just pushing my own agenda, my own thoughts, my own experience, the more I push myself forward, the less I'm aware of others and the less gratitude I might feel about what others are doing or what's around me. The more I acknowledge, the more open I am to what's around me, the more I acknowledge others, and the more I might feel gratitude for others. Let's take a quick look at... Oh, we're all the way in 17. We've got to go back. Let's take a very quick look at a text or two that speaks about Hod to bring these ideas together. Text number 7. Yaakov, I think we're up to you.
The word Hod means acknowledgement, hoda'ah, in the sense of recognizing the authority or status of someone or agreeing to the validity or correctness of something. Hod is also etymologically related to the word todah, expressing appreciation or gratitude.
You see, you can't express appreciation or gratitude unless you have a sense of humility. Appreciation and gratitude requires a person to say, I could not have done this without you. Or I needed you to get this done. Or I am the recipient of something that's coming from you. If I'm filled with my own ego, if I don't have any hod, then why should I thank you? Like, who are you? You didn't do anything for me. It was all me. All my netzach. I saw it through to the end. Okay, fine. That's netzach. That's netzach gone, you know, in a negative place. Hod allows a person to be appreciative, to have gratitude to someone else, to something else, and spiritually to God. On a spiritual level, Hod is the key of having a relationship with God. Hod means humility. Hod means submission, submitting to what God wants, right? I want to do this, but God says, hey, you might consider doing that. Okay, I'll do what God says. It's about praying to God and recognizing that God's in control. Often, you know, God's in control of what's going on. It means gratitude to God for the blessings in my life and appreciation. So Hod is a very important human soul power, and it really comprises a healthy mensch. A healthy human being is someone who not only has the ability, netzach, to attain their goals and see things through, but a healthy human being, a mensch, also has the ability to recognize that they're not always in control and that they need other forces, other blessings to be who they are and to exist the way they want to exist. And they acknowledge the blessings and are grateful for what they have. I need to read one final text. I'm going to read this as well. It's a longer text. I may cut this a little bit. This is from a letter from the Lubavitcher Rebbe, text number 12. This will speak for itself. Listen to this. We don't have the letter that was sent to the Rebbe, text 12. Page 157. We don't have the letter that was sent to the Rebbe, but here is the response that the Rebbe wrote back to this individual. Listen to the language. The Rebbe was usually very gentle with people. You'll see here there's an edge to it, and almost like a sense of, I cannot believe you don't see this, but you'll see what I'm talking about in text 12. In answer to your letter, in which you write of the current state of your affairs, adding that all my life, no good has befallen me. This person was clearly in a not good place, and they were writing how no good has ever befallen me. And conclude with a request for a blessing for yourself, together with your wife and children, may they live. The Rebbe responds, it seems that you are unaware of the contradiction in your letter. For a man whom the Creator has provided his partner in life and has blessed them with children, to say that all my life good has eluded me is ingratitude in a most shocking manner. Hundreds and thousands of people who pray every day to be blessed with children and would give all that they have for a single son or daughter have yet to merit it. May God bless them with the speedy fulfillment of their heart's desires. While you, who receive this blessing seemingly without an overabundance of praying for it, do not recognize what a treasure and joy this is, writing as you do in your letter. The Rebbe is chastising him. You write that no good has ever befallen you, and then you mention your wife and kids? Sure, you need a blessing, but no gratitude, no appreciation. The Rebbe was childless. Just so you know the context here. Maybe some of the context. The Rebbe and the Rebbetzin didn't have, the Rebbe and his wife couldn't have children. I'm not implying that one is supposed to struggle for a living or not enjoy perfect health. Now we can see maybe what this person is writing about. Maybe that they're not making money and maybe they have health challenges. My point is that perhaps the reason for your weak health and your difficulties in earning a living is your utter failure to appreciate God's blessing to you in a far more basic matter than perfect health and abundant sustenance. The blessing of sons and daughters who follow the way of God, the ways of God. When one does not recognize the explicit good bestowed from above, particularly when one's lack of recognition is so extreme that it results in statements such as you express in your letter, is it any wonder that blessings are not forthcoming from above in other matters? My hope is that these few lines will suffice to open your eyes to see the situation as true light. And when you begin to serve God with your true and inner joy, surely God will increase His blessings also in regard to health and sustenance. Okay, we'll stop it there. The point is like this. Again, I told you this letter has an edge. Usually the Rebbe wrote in very gentle fashion to people and spoke in very gentle, loving ways. Here there's definitely, you know, a certain edge to it. But here's what rises from this. We take our blessings for granted. We take them for granted all the time. The fact that you and I are breathing right now, until I mentioned it, you probably weren't thinking about it. Maybe you were. I wasn't thinking about it until I thought to mention it. But because we're not thinking about it, we're not feeling grateful for it. If we felt grateful for every blessing that we have, if we had true hod, number one, we would be the happiest people on earth. Be so happy. But also we would live a life of truth, which is truly acknowledging what we have. Hod is the ability to get out of ourselves and to see the other, whether it's the other person, the other goal or objective, or the other force in our life that creates blessings, i.e. God. Hod is about seeing the other. Netzach is pushing your agenda forward. Hod is seeing the other. Both comprise a healthy human being. To be a mensch is to push through and not let obstacles get in your way. To be a mensch is to yield sometimes, to let other things take precedence over what you want. And it's the ability to see that your blessings are coming from above and to be grateful for it and acknowledge them. Thank you very much for joining me tonight for lesson number 6 of the Kabbalah of Character.